Hello and welcome to today's episode of E-commerce with Coffee. In this interview, I get to talk with Talia Wolf. She's the founder and chief optimizer at GetUplift, which helps businesses improve their conversion process by being more in touch with the emotions of their customers. So we're really going to be talking a lot today about the importance of emotion in any buying journey and how brands should be more effectively engaging with their target audiences. So Talia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really excited for the conversation today. But, you know, before we dive in, you're one of the most energetic people I've ever chatted with. I imagine, I know it's late for you right now, but I imagine caffeine must play some role in your life.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I never started drinking coffee before I had children. So I was like in my 30s when I started drinking coffee for the first time. But it does now, for sure.
So what is your go-to drink that you'll make if you have like your morning coffee?
So funnily enough, I drink cold coffee. I don't drink hot coffee ever.
Right there with you.
And yeah, I am vegan, so I have almond milk in my coffee. And I have to have triple shot of espresso. So I have triple shot of espresso, 3 ice cubes, and then almond milk to the end. And I have quite a big glass. Like I have like this kind of like.
So 3 shots of espresso, is that once a day or is that 3 shots per drink? That's the important question.
Twice there we go. A day, 3 shots of espresso.
You know, I'm pretty sure I read a study recently that, you know, coffee can actually be good for you, especially when you're not putting tons of cream and sugar and stuff into it. So, you know, I'll err on that side of the argument.
I don't know. I don't feel really good about it. I'm like, I should probably drink tea, but I'll have my first one at like 8 a.m. and then around 1 o'clock, like 1 p.m., I'm like, okay, coffee.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm right there with you with the cold coffee. It's just, you know, even in the dead of winter, I don't need to wait 20 minutes for my drink to cool down enough to drink it. You know, that's not fun for me.
I know. 100%.
Well, you know, before we dive into the meat of the conversation, would love if you could just, you know, give our audience a little bit of your personal and professional background. You know, what brought you to marketing and e-commerce and then ultimately, you know, helped you find your passion for conversion rate optimization?
Yeah, great question. So I started out basically driving traffic. So I worked at a social media agency and I was in charge of driving traffic to like basically doing Facebook ads, Twitter ads, YouTube, LinkedIn, all that good stuff. And I kind of stumbled upon conversion optimization. So what I do is I help brands. I actually work with e-commerce and SaaS to optimize their funnels. So essentially, if you have a bunch of people coming to your website and you want to convert more of them and turn more of them into sales, what I do is actually help turn those people into sales. And I stumbled upon it. I was working with a very big brand back in the day, and they had no idea how the ads we were basically sending to their website were performing. All they cared about was likes and engagements on Facebook. And I kept asking, like, are you getting any sales? Like, are people actually buying your product? And they had no idea. So I called this person up and I said, like, here's a snippet. It's called, like, it's something called Google Analytics. I'm just gonna, can you just put this on your website and I will track this stuff? And that was the beginning, me kind of basically playing around and like, let me change this on the site. Let me change this on the landing page. Maybe I should try this copy. It was a huge guessing game, really, until I started building an actual process for optimization. And it was really, it's really based on a lot of failures, really. And as you mentioned in my, you know, when you were kind of introducing me, it's all based on psychology, how people make purchasing decisions, the emotions behind the decisions, the real intent, and stepping away from tactical stuff, like stepping away from like changing the color of a button and really diving into why is your customer there? What is their true intent? What are their biggest pains? So that's what I do. And GetUplift is an agency and we also have a training space. And basically we work with amazing brands and just optimize their websites.
No, I appreciate the oversight there. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your team does specifically? I know on the website you talk about doing website audits, you do existing customer interviews, competitive analysis of competition. Yeah. Probably just stole a few of your answers there, but can you talk to us a little bit about how you support those brands you work with?
Yeah, for sure. I love talking about this. So this all kind of stems from the beginning, right? At the beginning, I would just look at a page and I'd say, I don't know, maybe I'll change the headline and it will work. And you all know this feeling. You're looking at your website and like, why aren't people converting? It can drive you nuts. And you've tried all the things and it's just not really moving, not really doing anything. So I took a step back and I was like, okay, let's figure out how people make decisions to buy, because that's the whole idea. We're trying to get people to buy. So essentially what I ended up doing is kind of digging into the psychology of how people make decisions. And I uncovered, and this isn't me, psychologists, neuroscientists, and the biggest brands in the world know this, that people make decisions based on their emotions. And I understood that in order to increase my clients' conversions, I have to understand their customers' emotions. I have to understand their pains, challenges, the things that are keeping them up at night. And I need to understand, what are the desired outcomes? How do they want to feel after buying a product? To do that, we need to do some of the research that you mentioned. So a lot of our work is, yes, analytical, looking at data, where's the leak, what's not working, which page? But the real meaningful work is actually done with the research. And that's where we do customer surveys and we do interviews with customers and we'll do something called review mining and social listening. And we do competitor analysis, but not competitor analysis, like looking at pricing and how much are they charging, but what are they saying? What are the emotional triggers? Like, how are they speaking to? Who are they speaking to? We do a bunch of things in terms of design analysis too, looking at color psychology, looking at the visuals that you're using. Are you using the right emotional visuals that support your message? And a CRO analysis and all sorts of stuff. So we do all of that. And the reason why this works so well, and especially in e-commerce, we've seen such crazy results, is because once we identify the biggest pain that a customer has, and we identify their biggest desired outcome, it's clear as daylight what's wrong. You'll look at your product page and you're like, of course it's not working. I'm saying all the wrong things, or I'm not saying enough, or I'm talking to someone who isn't even my customer. I'm pitching things they don't even care about. And then you're like, okay, so here's what I should be mentioning. And you can write content so you know what copy to choose, what colors to choose, what design to choose, what your hierarchy should be. Everything kind of comes into place because you're finally customer-led. You're finally making it about your customers and not your product. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And to that point, you'll see on LinkedIn, depending on who people follow, where they'll make posts of, you know, which of these buttons do you like more? Or which of these, you know, very minute tactical things is better? And, you know, I'm sure there's probably some value to that somewhere down the line. But to your point, you need to go up the funnel or you know, up the river to stem the initial problem, right, that someone has.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about how this applies to a business-to-business context versus business-to-consumer, right? I mean, you know, people have been talking that consumer expectations have changed so much over the past decade plus, and recently so have B2B buyer expectations. And a lot of people say it's because, you know, Amazon made the buying experience so simple that, you know, now the business-to-business buyer wants a similar experience they have in their personal lives. So talk to us a little bit about that.
That's such a great question, because one of the first things people say to me as soon as I bring up the importance of emotion is, cool, I see how that works in B2C, but B2B, that's like unrelated, right? But for some reason, we somehow convinced ourselves that with a B2B purchase, there's a robot sitting behind the screen or something. It's people are people and we're human. And as an example, if you are a B2C company, then the person sitting behind the screen is making a decision about themselves. Maybe they have to ask their significant other, like, hey, what do you think about this? When you are making a business purchase, if you're testing out a software like email marketing, a landing page builder, anything really, when you are purchasing an HR software, something for the company, so many emotions go through your brain because it's not just your decision. It's, hey, what if my team doesn't like my choice? What if my manager says it's terrible? What if we, you know, transfer everything over into this new product and then everything gets deleted in a freak accident? Or what if the adoption is low? Or what if it's too expensive and I've spent all... There's just so many emotions going through your mind because it's not just yourself. You're considering everyone's emotions. You're considering everyone's needs. So emotion actually matters in B2B so much. And unfortunately, in the B2B industry, people just ignore it completely. And all they focus on is, here, we have AI, we have machine learning, this is our feature. Look at this beautiful screenshot on desktop, on tablet, on a mobile phone. But that's what we do. It's crazy. Like, we've convinced ourselves, we're like, robots. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and that's, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because it really does almost seem like there's more pressure on a business-to-business buying decision, right? Because, you know, if you make the wrong decision, someone up the chain is probably going to wonder why you made that decision. Or, you know, it's interesting. I'd never really thought about it like that.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, so many other pieces to it, but it's usually, if you're in the space of optimizing your funnels and you're in B2B, that means you're probably in a very competitive market. And if you want to stand out in the SaaS business, oh gosh, you have to speak to your specific customers because they are comparing everyone. They're looking at Asana, Trello, Slack, ClickUp, Teamwork. They're looking at everything and going, okay, who's best for me? And if you don't speak directly to my specific problem, I'm not going to buy it. So it has an even more bigger impact, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, would love if you could give some examples of, you know, what are some of the things that you most commonly see businesses doing, you know, wrong maybe is a strong word for it, but, you know, something they could be doing better in terms of conveying that information correctly to their target audience.
Well, I think specifically with e-commerce, what I see is the focus on the solution that you're offering, the focus on the actual product versus focusing on the customer. Now, I sound a bit like a broken record, but I feel like I have to say this. So people don't buy products, right? They buy better versions of themselves. So whether if you are selling a watch, flowers, a device that helps you improve your posture, like one of our clients, or if it's canvases, which is another one of our clients, everything has an emotional reason to it. And ultimately, they're not really buying a canvas. So for example, they're not really buying a piece of, you know, of an image. They're buying something to complement their house. They're buying something to set the ambience in their house. They're buying something to feel at home. How, like, that's big pressure. Like, you're buying a huge canvas for your house and it has to withhold all the values and like everyone should like it and it should like support everything else in the house and it should feel perfect. There's like a lot of things that go into it. But ultimately you get to a landing page or you get to a website, especially in e-commerce, and it just says 20% off now, sale, sale, sale. Or you have the sign up now to our newsletter and you will get 5% off your next, I'm like, what? That's like everyone comes up to customers with deals and sales and coupon codes because we've lost the ability to communicate how our products are going to make your lives better. And that is the one thing I would love brands to focus on more. I'm not saying that your solution doesn't matter. It does, but your solution is the vehicle that takes your prospect to their promised land. Okay, whether if it's to feel better about themselves or to feel like part of a community or if it's to feel good in their house, whatever it is, it's a vehicle. It's not the destination.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, you know, truthfully, that can apply to any context, right? I love that people they're buying an ideal state of themselves or of their life, right? I can absolutely see that. Now, you know, you talk about emotional targeting and some of the content that you put out and some of the stuff on your website. You know, talk to us a little bit about what does effective targeting specifically look like, or effective emotional targeting, pardon me.
Well, I think there's, you know, multiple applications to it, but ultimately it always starts out with identifying those emotional triggers. So it always starts with the pain. What is my prospect feeling right now? What are the pains, hesitations, concerns? And it always ends up with, okay, this is their desired outcome. This is how we are going to deliver it. When you are leveraging emotional targeting the right way, in a good way, you're essentially A, making it about them, and B, ensuring that a person can feel everything throughout the entire experience. It's not just a magical headline that says, be the best you. It's not that. It's everything, right? It's the visuals that you choose. It's the colors that you choose. It's the content hierarchy, what you should say and when. For example, one of the most common, well-known copywriting formulas is PAS, Pain, Agitation, Solution. So you start with the pain. You describe their pain and what they're going through. You have to know what their real pain is. It's not going to be something specific, you know, simple. It's going to be deeper, the actual pain that they feel. Then you're going to move on to agitation. That's the A. Agitation is basically saying, this is how it affects your life. This is how you are now affected by this pain. And solution is you offering your solution. But in order to do that, and it's a really high converting copy formula, I really highly recommend looking into it. In order to use it right, you do have to know your customer's emotions. You have to understand their pain. So it's more than just something on the surface. For example, with our client Upright, they basically sell an amazing device that helps you fix your posture. You put it on, it's this size.
Have one of those, funny enough.
Cool. Isn't it amazing? It's amazing. I love working.
It is amazing. But feel free to keep explaining it, because it's possible other people don't have one.
Cool. So basically it's this size, and you place it on your back, and every time you slouch, it vibrates and you sit up straight. And I kid you not, within a couple of days, you're sitting up straight. Your posture is better. Now, they could go the easy route and just say, you slouch, sit up straight. Or this is biofeedback, amazing chemistry, blah, 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 you know, whatever, like all the technical stuff. But instead, you know, doing our research, we understood there was a couple of things here. A, we're talking about people who are mostly sedentary. They're sitting in front of their computers all day and they're tired. And they basically, what we uncovered is everyone wants to improve their posture, but we forget. We may start out the day by sitting up straight, but as the day progresses, we're like, no, like this, right? Because we forget. And it's not our fault. And that's part of the messaging. You slouch because you forget to, but you don't have to with Upright because we do it for you. And we remind you. Or for a different type of audience they have, really cares about what they look like. They really care about their health. They care about building a better self for their future. So maybe they don't have pain right now, but they want to monitor their posture. They want to make sure that in the future they don't have, you know, back pain, neck pain, knee pain, which is a lot of people, you know, a lot of people feel that. And that is another piece of the messaging of feeling better, feeling healthier, seeing that on yourself. So instead of focusing your messaging on the, you know, pain, oh, you have back pain. Of course they have back pain. That's something that we can mention. But we also want to talk about, you know, feeling upset about the fact that you want to fix your posture and you just keep forgetting, or the idea that you have to sit another 6 or 7 hours in front of the computer and you're dreading it because you know you're going to be in pain. So there's all sorts of different pieces that you have to weave in to go beyond the shallow, you know, beyond the having back pain, use Upright. It's beyond that. It's really addressing their specific pains on the head and saying, we know what you're feeling. This is how it's affecting your life. Here's the solution. It actually works. And it does. So it's exciting. But hopefully that example kind of gives context to what I was trying to say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was listening to a webinar recently, and I'd never heard this before, but I put it on a sticky note, and I'm actually looking at it right now. Features tell, benefits sell.
Exactly.
There. Love that. So I realize this is probably not an easy answer, and it probably depends on the stage of the buying journey that someone's in. But have you noticed or seen any types of content specifically that do this better, right? Whether it be copy in a blog post or, you know, an informational video, or we're seeing infographics that are a lot more where it's not just an image of the product, but it's actual text overlay of what those features are. Again, probably depends on where the buyer is at. Well, I'd love to know if there's anything you've seen.
There are different stages of awareness in the customer journey, and it really does depend, which is a great answer by marketers, isn't it? It depends. It depends. I've seen great stuff on, I guess, on homepages too, and also in articles and blogs. I think email marketing is probably the hidden secret. I see, specifically with e-commerce brands, use email in such a bad way. Like, but if you do it the right way, wow, is that, a goldmine, because that is where content can thrive. That is where you have room to write long form copy, to talk about, address one specific pain they're going through and kind of walk them through it. That's where you can tell the story. You can introduce yourself. You can talk about why you built this product or why you designed it. It's email is an amazing place for this kind of content to live. And I think that especially in e-commerce, where it's basically, I mean, most companies you speak to who do email right say that that is like one of their biggest revenue streams. And you can do that really well in email. You can also do it really well in blog posts, but it's a little harder to sell. So again, as we said, depending on where your customer is in the customer journey, you would want to utilize this everywhere. But email is a good place.
No, it's interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out, because it is interesting how many people seem to believe that, you know, email marketing doesn't work as well. People's inboxes are too clogged these days. But I mean, realistically, are you sure you're doing it in the best way possible, right? Are you sending someone an email that they look at and say, wow, that's relevant to me. I want to read that and know what they're sending me. Do I want to read this pages long blog post? Because I know when I look at a page full of text, my eyes generally go crossed.
Yeah, I get that. I completely get that. And I think that's the point. I think everyone tells you that people don't read anymore, but it's not that we don't read. You just need to give them a reason to.
Yeah, isn't it? I forget what the exact stat is. You know, 30 years ago, the average human's attention span was 7 minutes or something, or 10 minutes. And now it's 7 seconds, just exponentially less. That's crazy to me. But I see it. I experience it myself.
No, 100%. And I think that it gets trickier. But the cool thing is, because it's so tricky and because our customers are seeing 40,000 messages a day and people are like targeting and triggering them and ads and whatever, if you get this right, if you do the foundational research and kind of really get to know your customers well, then it's so much easier to actually surpass all that noise and get their attention span and, you know, really create a connection and a relationship. So if you take the time to cover the foundation that, I mean, this is a made up number, but 99% of companies just skip and go immediately to sale, sale, sale. And we're speaking to everyone, but you actually take some time to do the research. In the long run, you will grab people's attention. You will keep it. You will convert them. You will create lifetime value with people. So it's worth it.
Absolutely. Now, we've, you know, obviously focusing a lot on emotion and the emotions of the buyer, but I'd imagine logic has to come into the decision at some point. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I mean, you know, at what point does the consumer or the customer begin to validate their purchase or you know, think logically about the decision, the emotions start to wear off?
I think they always do. So it's not a matter of let's pull them in with some psychological cool thing and then like keep them. It's more about strategy. For example, one you mentioned, what was it? Features. What was the sentence? It was great. Features.
Features tell, benefits sell.
Right. One of the best formulas that we use and I teach students is how to write emotional compelling copy. And what we do is one of these examples is you take the feature. So let's say, I don't know, AI, right? I can't think of anything else. It's AI. Any kind of feature you have, it has five different colors. It vibrates, whatever the feature is. The key is not to hide it and not talk about it. It's to take the feature and then add the emotional value. The fact that you can, you know, change this in these settings will lead to this emotional result. So when you're writing the copy, you don't just say 500 templates. You say, get all the templates that you need in order to achieve X, Y, and Z. So you're always connecting the logic with the emotion. They're not separate. It's just that it depends on the page you're using it, right? On a homepage, you're going to be a lot more in the header, more emotional, explain who you are so people can land on the page and say, I know what this is. I know why I should do it, and I know what I should do, the three whys. What this is, why I should do it, and what to actually do to get this. So, but within that, you're explaining what you are, but you're also leveraging emotion to tell a story, to sell them on that desired outcome. But when they'll go to the product page, you will now tell them about the actual product. Like you'll have specs in there and you'll explain how things work or what they get, or it comes with X, Y, and Z. That's fantastic. But what I would like to say is, yes, those are selling points, but let's add the value. How does this specific feature, this specific add-on help me become that better version? So what I'm trying to say is it's not just like emotion, logic, logic, emotion. It's all together, but it's about understanding that in order to kind of make it more persuasive is to show them why the logic that they're looking at is emotionally beneficial for them. And it's not apart, it's together.
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds like you're saying, you know, don't let them or don't make them connect the dots themselves, make it explicitly clear for them. So what is it and what is it going to do?
Yeah, exactly. And also, if we go back to SaaS, for example, one of my first recommendations is, okay, let's talk about the messaging on a homepage, for example. Let's look at what visual we use. Because with SaaS, everyone's immediately screenshots, right? So my initial thing I like to test is what happens if we don't have a screenshot in the header and have a message that really talks about your results and a visual that shows that result. As people start scrolling, they'll see screenshots because that matters. Of course it matters, but it's about telling a story and it's about setting the scene. And it's the same with a product page. It's the same with your all product pages or your, you know, if you have a testimonials page or your homepage, it has to tell a story.
Yeah. Well, so would be curious, you know, obviously, you know, we just mentioned a minute ago that consumer or I mean, I guess just people in general, their attention spans have shrunk over time. You know, I'd imagine that consumers have always wanted a better end state, right? I mean, people buy things for that reason. But can you talk a little bit about how, if in any way, has emotional targeting changed over time? And is it, do you think, in result of the attention span shrinking or maybe another factor?
Wow, that's such a good question. I think, you know, when I started my journey within conversion optimization, I was looking at what people were doing. And they're still kind of doing it. It's not as bad. But, you know, sale, 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 money, money, money. It's all about like that. And then what I did is I looked at offline advertising. The Nikes of the world, the Legos of the world, the Adidases of the world. Offline, like television and billboards. They're all so emotional, right? They're all based on making you feel something. Go back to like one of the first Lego ads as what it is beautiful. That's the headline. There's nothing in there about like how many Lego pieces, how much it costs, what colors you get. You can build Batman's ship from or whatever, like the Batmobile. There's nothing in there. It's a girl, a little girl standing next to a pile of literally nothing. And it says, what it is beautiful. And the whole idea there was you are building a future and your kid, your child will build whatever they want and it's gonna be beautiful, but let their imagination run. It doesn't matter what it is. But when you looked at the offline world, that's what they were doing. And then when you actually looked at ads for Lego online, it was get this for 5% off, for 20% off. Like, for some reason, there was like this disconnect between offline world and online world. And the crazy thing is, you couldn't even track what was happening offline. They had no idea if their billboard was working or if their television ad was working or their radio ad was working. And online, you can literally track every click, every purchase. So for me, when I think about like how it's evolved or how it's changed, it's more about, you know, not doing it at all in the past. Like, no one did this. It was like, what are you even talking about? Versus today, where I feel like, you know, more people are doing it, but also understand the importance of it. Because in a world where, as we say, we moved from 7 minutes to 7 seconds, hopefully that's the right stat.
Close enough.
You can't not do it. No one's going to sit there. You know, I once heard Mike, I think it was Mike King, talk about how people search online and how you'll enter something in Google and you'll write like VA services, and then you'll go, if you're using Apple, you'll click command and you'll open all the different tabs and you'll have all the tabs open and you're tab jumping, you're tab surfing until you find like nope. Then something catches your eye and you're like, interesting, let's read on. That is how emotional targeting helps, because if you say the right message to just grab their attention and say, oh wait, this looks like it's for me, then you grab their attention and they're there, right? And you can stop that 7 seconds and get them to spend the time to read, giving them a reason to read.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I feel like everyone can probably relate to that, where you've gone, I mean, even on Amazon, right? The first thing you're looking at is the image of the product, and you're going to keep going until you find one that compels you to stop and actually read the rest of the information, right? Would love if, you know, we could talk a little bit about, you know, there's obviously larger brands, smaller brands, there are benefits and you know, cons, trying to think of what the opposite of benefits is, and cons to both. But you know, if a company doesn't have tons and tons of traffic or tons and tons of existing customers, how do you advise they go about analyzing their conversion rate funnel and running tests?
Well, that is, I mean, it's a couple of questions in there, right? Because number one, I would say first and foremost, not having enough traffic gives you an even more important need to understand your customers' emotional triggers and know them better and understand the foundation. That's part one of the answer. Because, not turning this into Avengers thing, but you know, part one. So the idea is that if you know that, then at least you know that the more, even if there's not a lot of people coming, when they do come, you hit them right with the right message, the right design, the right customer journey, and they convert. So that's, don't think that only the biggest brands can do this, because the whole idea is that if you are a small company in a huge industry, that is your way to stand out. It's by making it about customers. So that's one thing. The second thing is to answer your question about like, how do they A/B test? You might not be able to, is the real answer. That's not a bad thing. Yes, CRO in general is viewed as A/B testing. I think that's it. Like, it's kind of like symbiotic for some reason. But conversion optimization is about so much more than A/B testing. It's about uncovering pains and problems and fixing them so that people have a better customer journey. So what better way to do that than understanding your customers? So you won't be able to test. That's fine. Just to give you an idea, you want to have around 300 conversions a month of the same conversion. So if you're trying to get sales, if you want to A/B test, you have to have at least 300 sales a month in order to run statistically significant tests. Just saying. Don't have that? No worries. What you want to do is leverage the research that you're doing, which is all the stuff we mentioned, like interviews, customer surveys, visitor surveys, review mining, social listening, all that good stuff. to make educated guesses. Yes, I did just say educated guesses. And make bigger changes. Don't just change the CTA because that's not going to help you. Changing a call to action button on a small site is going to give you 0% uplift. But if you take everything you've learned about your customers and completely redesign the page, completely rewrite the page and make it about your customer, won't be able to test it live, but 3 months down the line or 2 months down the line, compare the dates and see how you're doing. And you'll feel it on your revenue, like you'll feel it on the pipeline. But it's even more important to do this research if you have a small business or not enough customers.
Yeah, each opportunity just matters that much more in that context, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Talia, this has been a fascinating conversation. I feel like we probably haven't even scratched the surface of what we could, but the last thing I want to ask you, what are some of the books that you would recommend or the resources that, you know, you really enjoy to stay on top of trends, things that interest you, et cetera, as they regard to CRO?
Great question. I have a couple of things I can recommend. So number one, the first book you should read is by Dan Ariely. It's called Predictably Irrational. Phenomenal book. I read it almost a decade ago, still so relevant, and will be super helpful for you to understand how people make decisions. First recommendation. Other than that, my favorite resources are Copy Hackers. So Copy Hackers is a brilliant, brilliant well of knowledge about copywriting, about customer research, everything you need to know in order to understand how to write high converting copy. You can read our blog at Get Uplift, which also gives you a ton of free resources on psychology and how to speak your customer's language. And in addition, I also actually really love just reading Ross Simmons content. So he sends an amazing newsletter about content optimization in terms of SEO, really. But it's so good. And he basically breaks down how brands made it, how brands are so successful. And he breaks it down into like very specific pieces. And a lot of it is about customers and understanding them. So it's really amazing. Ross Simmons is on Twitter, and you can also follow him at Foundation, and really great content.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing those. We'll make sure to put those in the show notes. But, you know, for our listeners who, you know, what we've talked about resonated with them, or, you know, they want to get in touch and geek out about revenue or conversion rate optimization, you know, where can they get in touch with you and your team?
So getuplift.co is probably the best bet, but you can also follow me on Twitter, and you can also join our Facebook group, which is called We Optimize. Multiple ways. You can email me and through the website, or you can just, you know, go down the rabbit hole of all the content or watch YouTube videos. There's a ton in there. but yeah, anything, Twitter.
Well, I, you know, appreciate all the time that you shared with us, and, you know, would love to have you on the show again for future conversations.
That sounds amazing. I'd love to do that.
Awesome. Thanks, Talia.
Thank you.